On this first day of February 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are still in Chapter 7, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. Last verse, text 30. 7:30. Sādhi-bhūtādi dāivam māṁ sādhi-yajñam ca ye viduhu priyāna-kāle picamāṁ te vidur yukta cetasaha. Translation: those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. Purport. Persons acting in Krishna consciousness are never deviated from the path of entirely understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the transcendental association of Krishna consciousness, one can understand how the Supreme Lord is the governing principle of the material manifestation and even of the demigods. Gradually, by such transcendental association, one becomes convinced of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the time of death, such a Krishna-conscious person can never forget Krishna. Naturally, he is thus promoted to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan. This seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna-conscious person. The beginning of Krishna-consciousness is association of persons who are Krishna-conscious. Such association is spiritual and puts one directly in touch with the Supreme Lord. And, by His grace, one can understand Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the same time, one can really understand the constitutional position of the living entity and how the living entity forgets Krishna and becomes entangled in material activities. By gradual development of Krishna consciousness in good association, the living entity can understand that, due to forgetfulness of Krishna, he has become conditioned by the laws of material nature. He can also understand that this human form of life is an opportunity to regain Krishna consciousness and that it should be fully utilized to attain the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. Many subjects have been discussed in this chapter: the man in distress, the inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death, and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. However, he who is actually elevated in Krishna consciousness does not care for the different processes. He simply directly engages himself in activities of Krishna consciousness and thereby factually attains his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Lord Krishna. In such a situation, he takes pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. He is convinced that by his doing so, all his objectives will be fulfilled. This determined faith is called Dhridhavrata, and it is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, or transcendental loving service. That is the verdict of all scriptures. This seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the substance of that conviction. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of knowledge of the Absolute. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So we're going to speak about this verse a little bit, then we'll have a review of the chapter. We usually do that at the end. So this verse and the previous verse are tied together, as they all are. And if you recall, at the beginning of text 27, Krishna is describing how everyone is born into this world overwhelmed with the dualities of the attraction and repulsion. Icha dvesha. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. And from that attraction and repulsion comes this delusion of duality in this world. Actually, what's happening is that this is just the energy of Krishna relating to our senses and our mind. And sometimes that combination is pleasing, sometimes it's displeasing. And we live, our lives trying to increase the happiness and decrease the misery. This is called the duality. But ultimately, that's all a delusion. This world, in essence, is meant for our reformation. It's dukkali and shashvatam. That phrase will be spoken in the next chapter. It's really a place of unhappiness. There are little droplets of sense pleasure, but there's really an ocean of unhappiness. There's threefold miseries, those miseries caused by our own bodies and minds, by other people or other living entities in general, or natural disturbances. And the framework for all of these is birth, old age, disease, and death. Everybody goes through that. Every living organism goes through those things. So that's the general nature of this lifetime. So we should want to get out of that. We should want to be reinstated in our spiritual nature, where there, and the spiritual world, where there's no birth, old age, disease, and death. There's no threefold miseries. And once we hear about it. Now, you can only hear about that, as Prabhupada explains, in the association of devotees. So that's an essential aspect. Now, how to get beyond this delusion of duality, that's spoken of in the 28th verse here. Yesham dontakatam papam. One has to give up sinful activities. The sinful activities are those which violate the rules of the shastra. Oh, we can't put the book on the floor. We don't have any more. At least give a pillow. Give a pillow. That's a pillow. Okay. That's it. There you go. You have it. Thank you, Prabhupada. So, what is papa? What is papa? Papa is sin. There are certain rules and regulations set down by the higher authority, namely the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like in this Bhagavad Gita book and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Manu Samhita. And if one observes those, follows those, then one is punya karmanam, is pious. If one violates, it's papa. So one has to end all the sinful activity and just do pious activity. Then one can overcome this delusion of duality and be firmly fixed in bhajan, in practicing devotional service. Dridhavrata. Dridhavrata means a firm vow. You become determined and you don't waver. You know? That's what dridhavrata means. Then jara madana mokshaya, one can be liberated from old age and death. And by taking shelter of me, mama shruti atantiye. And this is text 29, previous verse. And then he gives a list of things that one then understands, become revealed. First is Brahma. They understand Brahman. They actually are Brahman. We are by nature Brahman, but we rise to the Brahma Bhuta platform. We realize our spiritual nature beyond the dualities and miseries of this world. And they understand Brahma in truth. And the Adhyatma and the karma, these are different subject matters, will be explained at the beginning of the next chapter. So what is Adhyatma? Transcendental. They understand transcendental activities, adhyatma karma. They understand what really transcendental activities are. They understand the principle of adibhuta. Now, adibhuta is the material manifestation. Adibhuta is the principle guiding the material manifestation. They understand that that's Krishna. Adiyagya, they also know that he is the principle behind all sacrifices. And then someone who knows these things can understand Krishna at the time of death. Can know him at the time of death. And that's success in this life. There's a verse at the beginning of the second canto. It says, Etavad sankhya yoga abhyam svadharma padinishtaya janma labak purak pungsan ante narayana smriti. This is Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit, who is about to die in a few days. There's a very dramatic scene. He sits down on the bank of the river, Ganges, to hear Bhagavatam for 7 days from Shukadeva Goswami. He gives up his kingdom and everything. Because he was cursed to die in 7 days. So it's a very fraught situation. No moment can be wasted. No sleeping, no eating, no nothing. Just listening to Bhagavatam and hearing Bhagavatam speaking about it. So he says to them, to Prigat, Etavaj Sankhya Yoga Abhyam. Whatever you do in terms of Sankhya or Yoga or your duties in this world will be successful if you can remember Krishna at the time of death. Remember Narayan. Krishna is the original Narayan. Krishna will say the same thing in the next chapter, text 5. Antakali tamameva smudan mukta kalevaram. One who remembers me as he quits this body, means die, then you come to me, no doubt about it. And the general principle is whatever you think of, whatever is the dominant thought, at that time, that will determine your next life. That dominant thought is determined by what you do between now and when you leave your body. This is our freedom. We can cultivate Krishna consciousness, or we can cultivate some other consciousness. That is our independence. And so this chapter, as Prabhupada explains, is giving us a way that we can become Krishna conscious in this lifetime. The seventh chapter explains how one can become fully Krishna conscious. So let's see what Prabhupada says here. So first comes association. Now Prabhupada is reviewing, there's this famous two verses that Rupa Goswami wrote in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which are like the ladder, from faith to love, from Shraddha to Prema. And this is universally applicable. So the beginning is Shraddha, some faith. Now, there's different levels of faith. The preliminary faith means you have some interest, some curiosity, you want to associate with devotees. Even that faith can be manifested anywhere in the world. If you get a book and you open that book and you're curious to read that, you're associating with Srila Prabhupada in the most important way, hearing. Hearing is the key way of association. But so many ways you come to the temple or you get online and you get into, you know, somehow or other you're hearing, you're associating. So that's a little faith. Now as soon as you hear and you get sadhu sangha, you see, then naturally, if you're receptive, oh, let me practice that. Let me begin the practice. It's like it happens like that anyway. If you hear about some other kind of yoga, you know, you're a little bit out of shape, you have an ache here and there, you're a little bit overweight, and you meet somebody who's very svelte. So how do you get their way? Oh, yoga. Hatha yoga. Oh, so you have some faith. You have direct perception. Look what it did for me. Right? Then, let me try it. Let me go to the yoga studio. And bending and stretching, stretching and bending. And you become a little bit advanced, and you're feeling the benefits. Right? So this is true of anything. So in Krishna consciousness, the same thing is there. And by sadhu sangha, the faith develops to the point, should be, where you want to practice. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. That's the main practice. It's called bhajana kriya, doing bhajan. The more that we become absorbed in chanting and hearing, especially the holy name, then what happens? Anartha nivritti. The anarthas in the heart, in the consciousness, which are obscuring our vision of Krishna and ourselves, and keeping us within the realm of the illusion or delusion of duality, and that is cleared away. Nivritti means negated. And if we practice properly, we come to the point of nishta. Nishta is like this dridhavrata, firm faith. And that firm faith, Prabhupada, he gives a definition here. Shraddha shabde vishwas kore sudhidha nishtroi krishne bhakti kore sarva karma katohoi. This is given by Krishna's Kavach. Prabhupada is summarizing here in this last paragraph. The real faith, you know, firm faith, is shraddha shabde vishwas kore, the firm conviction that just by the activities of Krishna consciousness, of bhakti yoga, all my desires will be fulfilled. That is all I need to do in this life. Whatever I need for my physical maintenance, that can also be done in the realm of Krishna conscious activity. Just like in this chapter, Krishna says, Dharma vadadho bhuteshu kamo smimarasha bhadatarshabha. That I am sex life, that's not against religious principles. So there's eating, we have to eat, there's a prasadam. There's a way of cooking and offering consciously and taking the remnants. You have to sustain the body. It helps you be Krishna conscious. It doesn't take you away from Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, eating and sex and these things can very well take you away from Krishna consciousness. But there's a Krishna conscious way of doing it. So that's bhajana kriya and nishta. And if one continues to practice, then you begin to enter the realms of attraction to Krishna, real taste. First comes real taste for the holy name and for all the aspects of Krishna consciousness. That means me less interested in material things that take your mind away from Krishna. And then you begin to become attracted to Krishna. And that develops more and more into actual ecstasy and pure love of God. There's a ladder there from Shraddha to Prema. So this seventh chapter gets us going on that ladder. It gives us a way of beginning. And Srila Prabhupada has explained that the middle six chapters, of which this is the first of the 18, of the middle six, are the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the others are kind of enhancing the but the essence of there is in the middle six chapters, culminating in chapter 12, which is called Bhakti Yoga. Yeah. So these and this particular chapter, practically every verse is quotable. That's why some devotees who are into it, they memorize this whole chapter. So we will now have a nice a little review of this chapter, overview. Now, text 1, of course, follows the end of the previous chapter. Now, the end of the previous chapter is all about dhyana yoga, right? Dhyana is the traditional yoga, ashtanga yoga, eight limbs of yama, niyama, the do's, or rather the don'ts and the do's of any process, sitting, asana. This is text 1. Yeah, I'm going back to text 1. Chapter 7. Asana, pranayama, right? Controlling the breath, withdrawing the senses from their objects, pratyahara, you know? And then dharana, concentration, dhyana, meditation, and samadhi, full absorption. Those are the eight limbs. But it's very difficult to do that. There's so many restrictions. You got to be alone. You can't do it in the hubbub of a big city, according to Krishna. Go to a secluded, sacred place, lay down a certain kind of cloth, practice pranayama, sit this way, you know, and then start fighting with the mind, you know. And from whatever and whatever the mind goes, withdraw it and bring it back. But so after this whole thing, now the benefit you've tried, me too. At one point. So after this whole explanation, Krishna, now the thing is, there's some wonderful descriptions of the benefits of this. Text 20 to 23. Where he says, you know, if you are able to achieve samadhi, you can experience the highest happiness through transcendental senses. Once having attained this, there's no greater gain, you know. So it's a great inducement to try it. But after all that, Arjun says, I don't think I can do it. The mind is too powerful. It's like the wind, you know. Try to control the wind when it's blowing high. You can't do it, you know. Chanchalam bhimana Krishna, very flickeringly. So Krishna says, yes, it's difficult, but by practice you can do it. And da, da, da. Arjun says, okay, but what if I fail? You know, then, well, I missed out on all the material pleasures, and I didn't achieve the spiritual perfection, so I'm like a riven cloud. I'm busted. So he says, don't worry. In the next birth, you'll start again, you know, where you left off. So, you know. But the basic point is that it's a very difficult process. And even Arjun, who's an intimate associate of Krishna's, felt unqualified. What to speak of us? So, therefore, at the end of the chapter, Krishna gives a very great encouragement to Arjun. He says, "Yoginam bhavi sarveshan magatenantaratmana shuddhavan bhajateyo mam samayuktat momata." That of all the yogis, those who are always thinking of me within their heart with great love and faith and worshipping me, they're the best of all. They're the best of all. Now, Arjun's an intimate friend of Krishna's. Of course, he's always thinking of Krishna. So he's encouraged by this. But the next verse, which is his first verse of this chapter, begins to explain how the mind can be fixed on Krishna without all of this operation of, you know, going and being in seclusion. This is how the mind can be attracted to Krishna. Now, if you're very attracted to something, there's no need to force yourself to think about it. You're already attracted. So the wonderful thing is that Krishna is all attractive. So any way we come in touch with him, you know, if we really focus and we're a little self-controlled, we will be attracted. And the best way is the holy name. But he begins with this general statement, Maya Sakta Manapartha. Now, hear, O Sanapita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Now, this knowing me in full, of course, nobody can ultimately know Krishna in full. He's too vast and but we can know him to the limit that we can know him, you know, which is something. It's enough to reestablish our relationship with Krishna. So this is you can know me free from doubt. That means full of faith. The opposite of doubt is faith. So then he begins, and he says, "I shall now declare unto you in fullest knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know." Now in the Ishopanishad, it is said, we have to understand what this material world is. You know, we have to understand how this material world relates to the spirit and how it came about and all of these things. This is called Sankhya. You know, then we can be firm in our devotional service, because we, after all, we live in the material world. We need a way of seeing this world in relation to Krishna and acting in this world in relation to Krishna, even while in the material body. And that's what this chapter is all about. So you'll feel that there's nothing further to be known. In other words, you'll be satisfied in your knowledge. It's rare, however. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So being fully Krishna conscious and transcending this world and going back to God, it is not an easy thing. It's a rare achievement. But we've been given a means by which we can actually achieve this great perfection. So we should take it. So then he starts analyzing this famous verb, Bhumarapa Onalavaya. What is this? There are eight elements. He divides it into eight. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. You can think solid matter, liquids, gases, space, you know, the wind. And then the subtleness of the mind. We all know we have a mind, but we can't see it, we can't weigh it, we can't smell it. But it's there, right? Intelligence, discriminating fact. And then the sense of self, the ego. These are eight elements. These eight, Krishna says, comprise my separated energy. They're separate from me, but they're mine. And they're also separate from each other. So this is what we call the external or lower energy. Krishna calls it the upara shakti, means the non-transcendental, the mundane energies. You know, and then we have the pura shakti, which is the name of our honored guest. So, excuse me, I don't want to embarrass you. So, besides these, Almighty Ambedkar, there's another superior energy of mind which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of material inferior nature. There's nothing in existence but these two energies that we see. Everything we see is a combination of them. Now, one may ask, well, how is this marble floor part of, you know, well, it's earth. Right? And there's also a living entity behind it. Bhumi. All the earth is like the external body of Bhumi. She's controlling. The air is his Vayu. There's a living entity behind it. These oceans, there's Varuna. There's always a God. There's consciousness behind everything. You see, nothing is happening just by chance. Everything is under control of the higher intelligence. So this is it. We are combinations of these two energies. And then Krishna says, all created beings have their source in these two natures or energies. Of all that is material and all spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and the dissolution. So these are both Krishna's energies. It's like the sunshine. Everything that exists is Krishna shine. There's no place, there's no anywhere that's not connected to God. We imagine there be a disconnection, and that's our maya, that's our illusion. So this whole chapter is meant to make the connection again in your everyday life, you know, in your everyday life. And then he has a very important verse. Text 7 is often quoted to explain how Krishna is the supreme. He's supreme to Brahman and also to any other incarnation. He's even superior to Vishnu. Matak pratadang nanyat kinchadasti dhananjaya. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung in a thread. So the reason why everything works is because Krishna's in there, you know, as the super soul guiding. And you don't see, I made this point, you don't see the thread when you have a nice pearl necklace. But without that thread, everything scatters. There's no necklace. So similarly, all this energy is moving in concert and doing all the things that we know it does because there's an intelligence behind it. That's the thread, that supreme intelligence is God. It's Krishna. So then he begins with text 8, given as a very practical way we can remember him. I am, O son of Kunti, I'm the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, syllable om in the Vedic mantras, the sound and ether, the ability of man. So we're always in touch with one or more of these things. You know, if we remember this verse, whenever we see the sun, we'll remember Krishna. The moon, Krishna. When we taste water, you remember Krishna. It's a way of connecting through our everyday experience. He goes on in this vein, I'm the original fragrance of the earth, the heat and fire, life of all that lives, the penance of the ascetics. I'm the original seed of all existences, the intelligence of the intelligent, the prowess of all powerful men. I'm strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles of some of the Bhardas. I mentioned this verse earlier. Then in general, he gives text 12, the general principle, all states of being, be they goodness, passion, or ignorance, are manifested by my energy. I am in one sense everything, but I am independent. I am not under the modes of material nature, for they are on the contrary, are within me. So this is where you get this Achintya Bheda Bheda. The Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. This is a doctrine that's expounded by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which means that everything in existence, both spiritual and material, including us, are simultaneously one with and different from Krishna. So you have this word non-different, you know, it's kind of to try to get that, because it's inconceivable. It's a Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. But we should know that there's nothing in existence that doesn't have a connection to Krishna. And when we see, you know, everyone forgetting Krishna, this is all illusion. And we forget the connection. So bhakti yoga is reestablishing the connection, using our facilities, beginning with our own bodies, mind, words, money, whatever we have, and then trying to engage other things. This building, you know, was turned into a temple by devotees who came down here from LA and worked for a year to turn it into a temple. The deities, they were, you know, originally marble blocks. They're not marble blocks anymore. There's Radha and Krishna there. It's been spiritualized by the consciousness, by the attention of devotees. So everything, the food, you know, you go in the kitchen, if no one walks in there, there's nothing. It's just ingredients. But then you go, you make it into an offering, and it's an act of love, and you partake of that, you're connecting to Krishna. Sound, the holy name. There's millions of sounds, but that particular sound will connect you to Krishna. So this is how, in our practical everyday life, we can be connected to Krishna. So they're all under Krishna, connected to him, but he's not there. He also has his independent existence. Deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, ignorance. The whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible. So we explain that. Because of our material desire, we want to forget Krishna, and Maya, under Krishna's guidance and his order, accommodates our desire to forget him. So we can struggle with this material world and ultimately come to our senses and surrender. We can't win over this material world, which he explains in the next text. Daivyesha Gunamayi. These are very important verses, by the way. Text 14, 7, these are very important. This divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of nature, is difficult to overcome, truly impossible to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. On our own strength, we have no hope. We cannot conquer over nature. It's too powerful. But with Krishna's help, we can easily cross beyond it. Because she's his servant. She'll withdraw her bewildering energy and actually turn into yogamaya, bring us closer to Krishna. This very earth and fire and water and everything that combine to make a nice illusion for us that we think we can enjoy, when we use it properly, that very earth, that very water, these, after all, that's what this temple is. It's a lot of earth, you know, now reminds us of Krishna. You see? So by Krishna's grace, the taking out the thorn with the thorn and then throwing them both away. So this is Daivyesha Gunamayi. Only by surrender to Krishna can we cross beyond this. But there are fools, mudhas, dushkritas, who don't surrender. You know, Krishna's declaring, text 15, who doesn't surrender? Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are the lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. So anyone who is not surrendering unto Krishna, pretty much everybody, fits into one of these categories, one or more. They're not mutually exclusive. You know? So we won't go into that. You can read that purport. It's a very nice, extensive purport. But suffice it to say that it's only out of ignorance. Even one may be a very great scholar, PhD or something, he's still a fool and a mudha if he doesn't surrender to Krishna. It just means that all that education made him stupider. You know, better to be. It's true. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, you know, statement. Better to be a simple person who, you know, chants Hare Krishna, illiterate. You know, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, one of our great acharyas, couldn't sign his name, but he was a great Vedic scholar. You know? So then, on a positive note, who does surrender to Krishna? Chaturvada. There are four classes of pious people who do. And they are the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and one who's searching for knowledge of the Absolute. Of those, they're all pious, but the best category is one who's searching knowledge. this is check 17 now, the one who was in full knowledge and who was always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him, he is dear to me. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls, these four categories. But one who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self, being engaged in my transcendental service. He is sure to attain me the highest and most perfect goal. So each one of us has come to Krishna out of one of these reasons. Curiosity, distress, whatever, some or mixture of them. But we should try to graduate to the point where we're truly in knowledge. We have a great opportunity, the abounding books. You know, you read the books of Srila Prabhupada and you gain knowledge, real knowledge, which can help you to strengthen your faith. You see, we have to get to that point of strong faith where we know that Krishna is God, we're his servants, and this is the path, this is the authorized path. I know this is what I want to do with my life. That's firm faith. But unless we graduate, because if you come in distress and you feel a little relief, then you may leave. If that's your motivation, just to relieve your distress, you see. And if you just stay on the curious platform, you say, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Now let me go find something else. Now I'm curious about something else. You see? But you get to the point of knowledge, and that, you know, deepens your understanding, and you become serious. So that's why Krishna is praising the one in knowledge. And then comes like a super key verse. This is the next one that you should all know. Text 19. Bahunam jamanamam te gyanavanam papadide vasudeva sarmiti samahatma sadulabha. One may cultivate knowledge for many, many births, but one has truly achieved knowledge when he surrenders to me, says Krishna. Because he knows that Vasudeva, I am everything. If you know the source of everything, then where is it? What more do you have to investigate? You know? Vasudeva samahatma sadulabha. This is a rare soul, a true mahatma, a great soul. Very important verse. Text 19. So, then, again, contrast. On the other hand, those whose knowledge have been stolen away by material desire surrender to other gods, you know, being controlled by their own natures. They're somewhere in the modes of nature, you know. They don't accept that Krishna is the be-all and end-all, and so, therefore, they have faith in some other gods. And Krishna says, okay, you want to have faith in other gods? I'll make your faith strong. He's the super soul, after all. I'm in everyone's heart a super soul. Text 21. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so he can devote himself to that particular deity. And that's why you find all kinds of people worshiping all kinds of things in this world. You know, from some powerful man to some totem pole to who knows what. Mammon. Most people worship mammon. And they get faith. Yeah. You know, I worked hard. You know, I got my money, and now I get the result, right? But Krishna says, text 22, whatever they're getting, so here he says, endowed with such faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. See, here's the problem, is that you're thinking you're getting your benefits from Shiva, Chandi, Ganesh, or whoever, but actually they're coming from Krishna. But if you don't recognize Krishna, then those benefits will be temporary. And that comes up in the next verse, text 23. Andavattu palam tesham tadbhavat alpamedasam. Such a mentality of wishing something other than the source of everything and our true benefactor and our true friend, Suridam, is a fool's errand and is only engaged in by alpamedasam, those of small intelligence. You see? Because the benefits, material benefits, are temporary. Antavat, they have an end. We're eternal. Therefore, any benefit that we're looking for that's not eternal is ultimately just a diversion. You know, it's a diversion from our real goal. That's the point. So then he gives a general principle. Devan devi ajoyanti. Whatever you worship, you go there. You know, if you worship some deva, you'll go to that planet. But it's temporary. But madbhaktayanti mamapi. My devotees come to me. And what's the benefit of that? Krishna's planet is not temporary. There is where you can live a true life of unlimited bliss and knowledge. Satchitananda Vigraha. Now, we can't see that. Therefore, we need faith. Therefore, we need association of the faithful. We need association of the realized. You know, and the easiest way to get that is Prabhupada's books. You know, and Prabhupada's movement. So, Devendra Yanti Madhbhakta Yanti Mamrita. And now we're coming up to the final few verses here. Then he. This is text 24, great verse to combat the Mayavadis. Unintelligent man who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Lord Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So this is a basic faith and principle of Krishna consciousness, that the ultimate reality, the source of everything, the supreme Brahman, is a person. And that person is the all-attractive personality of Godhead, Krishna. That's what Krishna is saying here. Those who are unintelligent think that the ultimate source of everything is the impersonal Brahman, who takes a form of Krishna at certain points in time, which is not the truth. Again, abuddhiya, only fools think that. And then, such fools, he's not manifest. Nam-prakasha servasa yoga maya samabhata. I'm never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I'm covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. So everyone but the devotees have a misunderstanding of who Krishna is. So then he says, I'm omniscient, I know past, present, and future, and all living beings, but nobody knows me in full. This is text 26. And then we come up on our last four verses that we discussed the last couple of days, Ichchadvesha Samutena, that we're all born either in this birth or when we're coming out of Mahavishnu, after a long slumber, into a world of duality. We pick up where we left off. Happiness and unhappiness, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor, cold and heat. This is called duality. This is a world of duality. But it's ultimately a delusion, you see. But if we and to be delivered from that delusion of duality, we need to practice devotional service with firm determination, which we can only do if we control the senses and give up sinful activity. And then we can be liberated and understand these things that he mentions at the end of the chapter. Brahman, Adhyatma, Karma, Adibhuta, Adidaivam, Adiyagya, and ultimately Krishna himself. Any questions on this little review? There's a lot there to understand. But I highly recommend this chapter. There are at least a dozen verses in this chapter that are quoted all the time, that Prabhupada quoted in his preaching. They're very important for our understanding. Okay, we'll begin chapter 8 in about a month. But before we do that, sorry, I'm going to India. We'll read from Krishna books. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.